Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
There's plenty of circumstantial evidence that the U.S. was interfering, and if not organizing it, then spurring it on.
Jeremy R. Hammond is editor of the online magazine Foreign Policy Journal. During the run-up to the Iraq War, he was critical of Bush administration arguments about weapons of mass destruction. He joins us from Taiwan for a discussion about Iran and Bush policies that have been continued under President Obama. Hammond's June 23rd piece has the U.S. played a role in fomenting unrest during Iran's election. It offers a history of U.S. propaganda and covert operations aimed at regime change in Iran.
We agree that the Iraqi dictator must not be permitted to threaten America and the world with horrible poisons and diseases and gases and atomic weapons. Since we all agree on this goal, the issue is, how best can we achieve it?
Under Bush, the U.S. spent millions on winning hearts and minds in the Mideast and also at home as administration policies became increasingly unpopular. We began by asking Jeremy Hammond to compare propaganda on Iran to propaganda about Iraq in 2002 and 2003.
There's some good comparisons to be made in as far as the propaganda campaign that's being waged with Iraq beginning pretty early in 2002. All the propaganda in the media basically following the official government line without any sort of real investigative journalism or critical analysis of what was being said, just parroting political officials. And that's happening in Iran. The media has failed and is failing in Iran just like it did before Iraq. And it's pretty much the same kind of rhetoric and propaganda coming from our government that we saw with Iraq, for instance, with the nuclear program. And the IAEA, that's the Nuclear Watchdog Agency, has said repeatedly that there's no real credible evidence that Iran today has a nuclear weapons program. But, you know, Bush administration officials, Obama administration, they keep repeatedly saying that Iran is trying to develop nuclear weapons. So this is just one example, but, you know, it goes on and on and on with the propaganda and the information that simply isn't verified. And the reason is because, you know, it's the same policy of regime change. We want to change the regime in Iran, and the government needs to be able to convince the public that that's what needs to happen. So this is what the goal of the propaganda is.
You came out earlier than other reporters, Jeremy Hammond, making this argument that there is ample reason to believe the U.S. likely had a hand in fomenting post-election chaos in Iran. It's sympathetic, at least, to the argument being made by Iranian leaders like Ahmadinejad. You've said, quote, whether the policy of regime change implemented under Bush has been quashed or continued by the administration of President Barack Obama remains to be seen, but what is incontrovertible is that the U.S. has a long and sordid history of interference in Iranian affairs. Let's listen to what Obama had to say about such accusations that the CIA has played a role in fomenting unrest.
The United States is not going to be a foil for the Iranian government to try to blame what's happening on the streets of Tehran on the CIA or on the White House, that this is an issue that is led by and given voice to the frustrations of the Iranian people.
Your Foreign Policy Journal article contradicts the president. Not a lot of people looking at that perspective on this, Jeremy Hammond. Mm-hmm. Why don't you first start by talking about the importance of this question that you're raising?
You kind of began by mentioning this is what is being claimed in Iran, which is correct. And we should be skeptical of those claims. Obviously, Iranian government officials aren't the best source for information on what's happening as far as U.S. foreign policy in their country. So we should be skeptical of those claims. On the other hand, there's plenty of reason not to dismiss those claims offhand. The standard operating procedure throughout the CIA's history has been to involve themselves in the affairs of other nations, including in elections, besides other kinds of covert operations. A lot of times what they do is support opposition groups and things. And one of the means by which they try to influence elections is paying people to go out into the streets, to riot, and things like that. You know, CIA has a long history of this. One book I can recommend to the listeners is William Blum's Killing Hope and also Rogue State. He wrote both those books, which I cited in my article for information on the National Endowment for Democracy. Now, what this organization is, in the 80s, they basically took what the CIA was doing, interfering in elections and that sort of thing, and they took what the CIA had done covertly up to that time and started doing it overtly through a different organization. Now, the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, they say they're a non-government organization, but it's really a quasi-governmental organization. They're funded by Congress, and what they do is they kind of dish out cash to other organizations. For example, several years back, there was an attempted coup against Chavez, and NED had financed the opposition organizations that were, you know, involved in the coup attempt, just as one example. In Nicaragua during the 80s, again, the CIA and NED kind of working hand-in-hand, supporting opposition groups in an attempt to undermine the Sandinista government. So there's a well-established history of this kind of operation. That's the first point I kind of made in the article, that this is pretty much standard operating procedure. If we don't like a government in a foreign country, we engage in these kinds of activities. And it's become overt. It's not even really secret anymore. And so besides aiding and supporting opposition groups, there's also the diaspora communities, you know, exile communities, like Iranian exiles. And just like we did in Iraq, another comparison, we supported groups like Ahmed Chalabi's group in Iraq. And they fed us all kinds of so-called intelligence on Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. And it was all just a fraud. But these are the kinds of groups we support if we don't like a government, to support them against that government. One of the groups the CIA is supported is actually on the State Department's list of terrorist organizations, and that's the Mujahideen Occult.
You cite roles for the National Endowment for Democracy and CIA in Nicaragua, Bulgaria, Albania, Mongolia, Haiti, China. The list goes on, Venezuela, and now Iran. And in talking about all of this, you write that about Bulgaria, quote, NED spent over $1.5 million in an effort to defeat the Bulgarian Socialist Party. When that effort failed, and the BSP won anyway, NED backed opposition groups that sowed chaos in the streets for months until the president and prime minister finally resigned. You go on, the NED in Albania supporting the opposition to the communist government that was elected in 1991. Once again, turmoil in the streets led to the collapse of the government, forcing a new election in which the U.S.-backed Democracy Party won. And there are many examples of stories like that, aren't there?
Right. This is kind of the goal of some of these operations, is just to destabilize the country enough so that, you know, it might reach a tipping point. In other cases, maybe the goal isn't, for example, in the case of Iran, if this is what's going on, then I don't think anyone really would have expected that it would have actually toppled the government. It does create a propaganda coup, and we're seeing that already with, you know, Obama administration. This is kind of funny, but serious. They had extended an invitation to Iranian officials to visit U.S. embassies in other countries for 4th of July festivities. And they rescinded the invitation after the elections because of the crackdown on dissidents. This is the kind of propaganda coup that has been achieved, because now the Obama administration has a way to back out of their promises to engage Iran diplomatically. Now, if they try to engage Iran diplomatically, there's going to be all sorts of pundits crying foul because of Obama's dealing with this horrible government that cracked down on dissidents, and the security forces killed 17 people in Iran just for protesting the elections. This is the propaganda line that's going to be used. So not necessarily always just to topple the government, but there's other goals in some of these kinds of activities.
Let's review what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told ABC's George Stephanopoulos June 7th. First, what she told the president about her qualifications, and then Stephanopoulos, the former press spokesperson under President Bill Clinton, also pushing Hillary Clinton on U.S. military policy on Iran, finishing her sentences for her at times, it seemed.
Clear to the president that I would be able to run the State Department and USAID, and that we would have to forge a team that I think we've done very well, and that I wanted special envoys because we were inheriting so many hotspot problems.
One of the envoys turned out to be longtime neocon and hawk on the Mideast, Dennis Ross. He was posted to Iran.
Your own envoy, Dennis Ross, has said one way to strengthen the position of the United States going into these negotiations is to make it very clear that if Iran used nuclear weapons against Israel or any U.S. ally, that would be met as an attack on the United States. Full response. Now, that was your position.
Hillary Clinton outlining a U.S. policy of diplomacy first, but also reinforcing her earlier positions on Iran.
If they believe, and you know, you have to put yourself into the shoes of the other party when you negotiate. If they believe that the United States might attack them the way that we did attack Iraq, for example.
Before they attack, as a first strike.
That's right, as a first strike. Or they might have some other enemy that would do that to them. Part of what we have to make clear to the Iranians is that their pursuit of nuclear weapons will actually trigger greater insecurity. Because right now, many of the nations in the neighborhood, as you know very well,
because Israel strike before they can finish.
Well, but not only that, I mean, other countries, other Arab countries, are deeply concerned about Iran having nuclear weapons.
Now, a few days after this interview, Dennis Ross released a new book outlining U.S. policy of limiting Iran's ability to market oil, plus how the U.S. might work to get other oil-producing nations in the region into what could be called an economic coalition of the willing for pressuring China and for encouraging Russian cooperation. Jeremy Hammond, the U.S. does seem to be ramping up its MIDI strategy to include more of an active phase on Iran.
The USA Today reported how USAID also has been funding Iraqi dissident groups. They're doing it overtly. There's a whole other angle with covert operations. People have raised the question to me, you've seen the indication that the U.S. government has actually directly supported the Mousavi opposition in Iran. And, you know, the answer to that is no. I haven't seen direct funding here, but this is one of the things. Well, the NED gets funding from Congress, and then they fund other organizations, which in turn can just pass that money off, and we lose the trail. So there's not always direct evidence of this kind of financing for dissident groups.
The United States has very openly been supporting the opposition candidates using the Voice of America and media in Iran.
Right. You know, a lot of this money is being spent on propaganda, Voice of America and, you know, Radio Farda, their Persian station. In 2006, the State Department opened a whole new office, basically to use funds given by Congress for this purpose. And they opened up offices in Dubai and in Turkey in order to deliver this funding to Voice of America and Radio Farda to broadcast into Iran. This was pretty widely reported at the time. And the media was actually pretty frank about what it was for. And it was reported, well, this is for propaganda. And they even used that term, which was a little bit remarkable that our mainstream media would report it that way. And that's the purpose. So propaganda, support for opposition groups, this is all pretty overt. Not really a secret. And at the same time, actually before 2006, in 2005, as early as that, Scott Ritter, who was a UN weapons inspector, who was one of the few voices speaking out against the Iraq war before the war, saying, you know, there's no evidence that Iraq still has weapons of mass destruction. A very credible voice in the anti-war movement had said in 2005 that the CIA was supporting the MEK. Then in 2006, Seymour Hersh had, a series of articles, not just one, on that topic, basically corroborating what Scott Ritter had written. And a number of other reporters have also written about this. Richard Sale had written about it. It's been widely reported enough, it's been corroborated by enough journalists that it's pretty well established, pretty well documented that this is going on. That we were supporting the MEK. And other groups, also Kurdish groups, Kurdish rebels in northern Iraq, have been making raids into Iran. We've been supporting those groups. And there's a group kind of based in eastern Iran and Pakistan, in the Balochistan region. They're called Jundala. We've been supporting them. And these are terrorist groups. These are not dissident groups. These are not just exiled communities or opposition groups. These are terrorist organizations. And some of these groups have been engaging in terrorism in Iran. In fact, just a few weeks before the election, Jundala claimed responsibility for an attack on one of Ahmadinejad's campaign office in the Sistan-Balochistan province. And this is a group, terrorist group, you know, attacking the incumbent president's campaign office. We were supporting this group. So this is the kind of activities that's going on. Iranian officials now are saying that the MEK has been involved in kind of causing riots and things during the protests. There was a lot of peaceful protests. A lot of people legitimately believed, you know, a lot of Iranians legitimately believed that their government had committed election fraud, and they wanted their vote counted, and they were out in the streets protesting this. Some of this may have been kind of provoked or encouraged by the U.S., but I don't want to say that there wasn't really a grassroots uprising. I think there was. I think there was a legitimate uprising in Iran. However, during some of these protests in the streets, when violence erupted, the Iranian government has accused some of these groups like the MEK and Jadullah of kind of going into these groups and committing violence intentionally. And then the government security forces, of course, have to crack down on the protests. And this is also kind of a standard operating procedure for these kind of operations. Obviously, what the Iranian government officials say about what's happening, we shouldn't, you know, accept that as evidence. We should be very skeptical of it. However, at the same time, like I said in the beginning, you know, neither should we dismiss it. There's credible patterns of behavior that indicate that this could be actually happening.
It's almost as if what we're seeing is the initial outcome, anyway, of a policy to find ways of strengthening groups that had complaints with one another and complaints with the Iranian government.
It could be the old divide and conquer tactic. Yeah, very much so. I think it's a big part of what's going on. Again, assuming that the U.S. has been heavily involved in this chaos that's happened in Iran.
You also quote conservative U.S. government officials who have been uneasy about this operation from the start, some of them even warning that it could reduce support for opposition figures or opposition groups.
Some of the people who opposed the creation of the Office of Iranian Affairs and opposed the congressional funding for this plan were Iranian groups. Some Iranian organizations said, you know, it'll just look like we're American stooges and that will undermine us. So there's that. But then the other part of it is, I think that's one of the intentions of the operation, is to kind of undermine, you know, not democratic movements, but undermine diplomacy. And, you know, a number of people have kind of written me to say, well, there's a new government now. We have Obama's in office. And he's shifted policy. He's reversed the policy. And I've written on that pretty extensively also. And I think this is just poor analysis, this idea that Obama has shifted policy towards Iran. There has been a shift in rhetoric. There's been a shift in the language. But the goal remains the same. They still want regime change. And if you look at, you know, Obama has said he wants to talk to the Iranians. Well, that's different. Bush said he wouldn't talk to the Iranians. But what does Obama want to talk to them about? He says, I want to sit down at the table with them, and we're going to tell them, you need to stop enriching uranium. And we're going to talk about that. That's the foundation of these dialogues that have been proposed. Well, that's not a negotiation. That's the exact same policy that the Bush administration had. Exactly the same. So this idea that the Obama administration has shifted policy towards Iran, there's really just no indication that that's true. And that's an important point because, again, these policies of regime change towards Iran in support for opposition groups and these covert operations taking place, you know, some people might assume that Obama would put an end to those, but I don't make that assumption. You know, for all we know, those operations are still taking place.
In fact, it appears like the Obama administration is starting to get tougher on rhetoric, starting to become a little more reactionary to the conservative media, and starting to take a posture that could put us right back into that conversation about an attack on Iran again.
Yeah, during his campaign, he's trying to get elected, so of course he's going to say what the American people want. What the American people want is dialogue and diplomacy. They don't want war. We, you know, Americans do not want to attack Iran. There's been polls that show that, you know, most Americans agree that Iran should be allowed the right, as under the NPT treaty, to nuclear power for civilian purposes. So the American people have a very different mindset from government officials' mindset. You know, this is one of the things after the Bush administration and the image he kind of created for the U.S., politicians realize that, you know, that all this tough cowboy talk has got to stop, and they need to have more nuanced kind of rhetoric coming out of Washington. And that's what Obama is. That's why he was selected. He talks a good talk, talking about diplomacy and things. But really, if you look at his policy towards Iran, it's just talk. The actual policy hasn't changed. This is the thing. People take the rhetoric as evidence of a shift in policy, but we have to actually look at what the policy is. And the policy is still regime change. This is one of the things about these talks. They need to be able to say we try diplomacy. If it comes to, for example, an Israeli strike on Iran, the U.S. government needs to be able to say, we tried diplomacy, and it failed. And blame that failure, of course, on the Iranians. And that's what this is about. And Obama administration officials have been pretty open about that. They've been pretty candid about that. The Secretary of State has basically said, the reason we want these talks is to get other countries on board for what she called crippling sanctions against Iran. That's the purpose of these talks. In other words, the purpose is not to re-engage Iran or to develop relations with Iran or to see progress with Iran on the nuclear program. It's just to create a propaganda situation where they can say, we're tried diplomacy and it failed. Now we can get Russia on board and China on board with tougher sanctions, crippling sanctions against Iran. This is the goal. Again, it's not a shift in policy. It's the exact same policy as under Bush. It's just more nuanced. And frankly, it's more intelligent policy because people are more easily fooled by this kind of policy than they were under Bush, who basically, you know, under the Bush administration, you know, policy officials are just saying, well, bomb Iran. Well, Obama's not doing that. He's being a lot smarter about it. But the policy remains the same.
So we've seen the Obama administration now denying access to Iranian officials. Tehran was to have sent an envoy to the U.S. That delegation denied visas. And we're also seeing a ramping up of international discussions on Iran. European leaders like the UK's Brown and others. But we have seen actual military activity in Iran, which you also go over in your piece. Just talk about this aspect of things. And also, you note that the presidential finding authorizing CIA activity in Iran is a good starting off point for this discussion, isn't it?
That's what I had mentioned earlier. Seymour Hersh had reported on, ABC News had reported on this, the London Telegraph had reported this, that it was a presidential finding basically authorizing the CIA to, and not only the CIA, the Pentagon also. The Pentagon has taken over some of what was usually the CIA's kind of area of operations. And so the CIA and the Pentagon kind of responsible for supporting these groups, the three groups that have been named a lot, the MEK, Kurdish groups, like the PJAK is one of the groups in Iraqi Kurdistan, and Jundullah out of Pakistan. If you look at a map of where those three groups operate out of, we've got Iran surrounded. The Jundullah group out of the east, the Kurdish groups out of the northwest who have been raiding into Iran, and the MEK has been operating out of more of the southern areas of Iraq. So kind of got Iran surrounded by these groups.
And we've seen Pakistani officials going public now with charges that the Jundillah claimed responsibility for a suicide bombing of a mosque, Revolutionary Guards holding a meeting inside. Iran accused the U.S. of being behind the bombing. This, again, right. a very scary phase of all of this.
Yeah, this was the Jundillah group had claimed responsibility for bombing a mosque. You know, Iran blamed the U.S. We should use that as evidence, but there's plenty of evidence that the U.S. has supported this group. Now, the U.S. condemned that attack. The State Department said, we condemn terrorism in all its forms against all nations. But at the same time, this is a group we've been supporting. We've financed this group. We've armed this group. Then they go and commit terrorist attacks like this. And so these denials and these condemnations really kind of lose their meaning. It's kind of, you know, I compare it to 1983 when Saddam Hussein was using chemical weapons. And Reagan condemned Saddam Hussein and condemned Iraq for using chemical weapons. And then he sent Donald Rumsfeld over there to say, oh, don't worry about that. We had to say that for public relations, but we still support you. So forget about what we say in public. Just worry about what we're doing behind closed doors. That's what's important. And that's correct. People should not take rhetoric and public declarations as evidence of policy. It's not. We need to look at the facts. We need to look at what actually is going on, what actually the policy is. And the policy has been support for terrorist groups to destabilize Iran. I don't think that they think that they're going to actually accomplish toppling the government. But one of the goals Gottrieder wrote about was they want to be able to create a situation where the Iranian government cracks down violently on these kinds of actions. And then we can point our finger and say, oh, look at this horrible regime and what they're doing. You know, the Iranian government has a horrible human rights record. I'm not suggesting that they don't, but the point is the U.S. government is trying to provoke the Iran government to engage in human rights abuses for propaganda purposes.
You describe the position being taken back in May of Mousavi. He, too, blamed foreign forces for this bombing of the mosque. And that's very important, isn't it? That's just May, very recently.
The other official had said, you know, the U.S. is behind this. He didn't say that. He just said it was foreign interference. So he wasn't as specific, but yeah, he did say that. So that is coming from even the opposition in Iran, that foreigners, and I think everyone knows what he meant when he said it was supported by foreigners. It was kind of a veiled reference to the U.S. It's what's called the color revolution, or actually a month before the elections, the Iranian government had accused the U.S. of trying to instigate what they called a velvet revolution, you know, referring again back to another CIA operation. And they've been making these charges for quite some time, well before the election. You know, there's plenty of reason to believe that there's some truth to this. And what we saw with what's called the color revolution immediately after the elections, there was a lot of information in the West. A lot of information was coming from Twitter, which I found really interesting. Not only bloggers, but mainstream media reports were relying on information from Twitter. I just thought this was bizarre that people, you know, respected commentators and journalists were relying on completely anonymous, completely unverifiable information. You know, and I was following that pretty closely, and it's so much information. You know, some of the things that were being said proved to be true. People getting killed in Tehran University, militia storming the university and shooting students. Some of these things proved to be true. But a lot of the information seemed like black propaganda. Well, I'll just give, you know, maybe a couple examples. One was the election council in Iran had announced that the election was invalid. And this kind of went viral on the blogosphere. Andrew Sullivan at The Atlantic reported that, and then from there it kind of just blossomed and was all over the internet. You know, it's completely false. In fact, I have another writer for me who writes for foreign policy journals, an Iranian, and I asked him to look at the source for this claim, and he told me it wasn't the election council. It was actually one of Mousavi's, one of his people in his campaign that had said the election was invalid. So this is being reported all over the internet in the United States as, you know, the official announcement that, you know, the election is invalid. And that's just one example, but there was all kinds of false information just being propagated. A lot of that was reported as being factual. And this is another thing. I didn't talk about this in my article, but the Pentagon has had programs to kind of research and develop cyber warfare techniques. And another thing that, you know, the NED and some of this funding is designed to do, the USAID, actually in USA Today, they linked to a document from USAID, and the document says pretty openly that one of the things that the aid is for, that they're giving to opposition groups, is to help them develop means of, you know, better organizing and communicating using new media to organize their opposition to the Iranian government. And this is exactly what we saw. So again, you know, there's no hard proof that the U.S. was really behind it, but there's plenty of circumstantial evidence that the U.S. was interfering and, if not organizing it, then spurring it on.
We've seen a hint of this in the States recently with the organization of a national effort around Tax Day. And we saw Tax Day Tea Party protests, and I was able to find a lot of linkages between the various websites. And they were quite obviously not grassroots at all. They were something else indeed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That was one of the things about Twitter. I noticed a lot of the Twitterers who were claiming to be Iranians, they had their dates that is being from Tehran, but a lot of them had the same little graphic. It was a little green graphic that said, "Where's my vote?" or something like that. And then they all, if you look on the Twitter website, you can see their profile and see where their friends are. And a lot of them were just kind of retwittering what other people had said. So they kind of like created multiple accounts, obviously working together to create multiple accounts to kind of propagate some of this information. And some of them pretty clearly were connected to each other. I mean, there were strong indications that that kind of thing was taking place.
We've been speaking with Jeremy R. Hammond, editor of Foreign Policy Journal, online at foreignpolicyjournal.com. His June 23rd story, "Has the U.S. Been Fomenting Unrest After Iran's Election?" He's working on a follow-up. Jeremy R. Hammond, thank you for joining us on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you.
For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced at Talk Nation Radio Studios in Storrs, Connecticut. Write to us at talknationradio@gmail.com and visit our website, talknationradio.org.